It's Stokely and Zach on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Some of the details and really the video and audio for our purposes coming out due to Nine News accessing the police body cam footage, Troy, from last August. Troy Rank filling in for Brandon Stokely today. Remember that story? Last August, Emmanuel racing to camp, was riding the median, was running behind, pulled over, got a ticket. Well, we have the audio from that. He pulled the old I play for the Broncos card, Troy. Check this out.
Man, I was driving in the middle lane all of a sudden.
So you're driving in between the double yellows?
Yeah. You got sideswiped by her.
So why were you driving in between the
double yellows? Well, I played for the Broncos.
Okay.
And I had to be at work at 8. People were driving slow. I had my emergency lights on. I was driving to work. What's the rule in driving in between the double yellows?
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, straight up, you're both going to get a ticket. You can't drive in the double yellows. You're both going to get a ticket for careless driving.
Well, so what was it created for? Emergency, right?
Yeah.
Well, I play for the Broncos.
I play for the Broncos. I have to be at work at 8, so let me go, dude. What do you think, Troy?
The play for the Broncos thing, I mean, that doesn't surprise me. A lot of athletes play that card. And the part that was funnier was like kind of, what was that lane created for? Emergencies. I've got an emergency. I mean, that was the implication. I had an emergency. I had to be somewhere.
That's what I thought was the funniest part of it.
Yeah,
like, I had my emergency flashers on.
Yeah, it was like, I had my mercy lights on. I was doing the right, like, it's like, no.
Mercy, right?
Yeah. It's for emergency vehicles. If we all had that, listen. I had to get from Longmont to Castle Rock this morning, and people in the left lane, I've told you, like, my one thing in life that drives me bananas, will not move over in the left lane going speed limit. And E-470 today was a traffic jam, which it never is. But I would have liked to just got on the shoulder for about 2 miles.
Of course.
You know, but that was the part that I found funny. It was like, and I wonder, because it was like he was trying to make up a scenario. And it's early in the morning, and, you know, like, you get caught, and, like, you're at the cop, like, hey, it's an emergency lane, right? I got an emergency.
He was thinking his way through it.
And it was just, it sounds funny because how many of us have had an emergency? It's like, well, I'm late. You know, it's like, I know it's emergency lane for emergency vehicles. The rest of us in the public don't get that luxury.
It's funny classic to me. It's not an indictment. It's not a future indictment. But I just hope that Emmanuel didn't think that, like, if you had an emergency, all you had to do is hit your emergency flashers and then you can ride, you know, between the double yellows.
Yeah. Yeah, if that were the case, I'd have one of those Starsky and Hutch sirens you just put on top of your car. And
yes.
Just start driving. Like, it's an old 1970s movie or a T.J. Hooker scene, just cruising in the Pinto or something and just throw the siren on top and, woo, I got this.
That's it. That's it.
That would be solid. Solid. Hey, listen, Emmanuel, you tried. I'll give you credit. You did try. But as he was describing it, I could just see that cop going, okay, why again were you driving in the middle?
Well, I play for the Broncos.
So, but like the thing is, like, he...
It's just good stuff. I give him credit for coming up with, like, a story. It was actually funny because he said it so matter-of-factly of... Mercy lights on.
Yeah.
This is an emergency lane.
And this chick sideswiped me.
He sideswiped me in my emergency. I give him credit. In a funny way, it was brilliant. It's just no chance you were ever going to get out of it.
But it was brilliant
that I had an emergency. She sideswiped me in my emergency. I had my mercy lights on. And then I mentioned I had an emergency. I had to be in practice.
What's the rule for driving in between? Steven, let me hear that whole thing from the top.
Man, I was driving in the middle lane all of a sudden.
So you're driving in between the double yellows?
Yeah. You got sideswiped by her.
So why were you driving in between the
double yellows? Well, I played for the Broncos.
Okay.
I had to be at work at 8. People were driving slow. I had my emergency lights on. I was driving to work. What's the rule in driving in between the double yellows?
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, straight up, you're both going to get a ticket. You can't drive in the double yellows. You're both going to get a ticket for careless driving.
So what was it created for? Mercy, right?
See, I love that.
That's actually,
I give him real credit for that. If it's an emergency lane, I got an emergency. It reminds me of that Seinfeld episode when he's like, is that frowned upon? When he's like, you had sexual relations with the maid on the desk. Is that frowned upon?
Yeah.
Is that frowned upon?
That's Larry David's writing right there.
Yeah, that's where Emmanuel's like, It's an emergency lane, yeah, and emergency, I had an emergency.
Right?
Emergency, right?
What's the big deal?
What are we missing here?
What's the big deal?
Emergency lane. I had an emergency. Sounds like I'm in the clear. But I love that. That is actually brilliant on his part. Never going to work, but it's freaking hilarious.
And when the cop asked him, why were you driving in the median? He started his explanation was, well, I played for the Broncos, so let's start there. You know, why was I trying to play for the Broncos?
Well, I played for the Broncos.
So, it's...
You know, it'd be funnier if the guy was like,
I love it.
If it was a different, but desperate, and it's just like, I play for the Denver Outlaws, in case you don't know.
Yes.
With the Broncos, you actually know, like, hey, I can see why guys play that card. It'd be funnier to be like, I don't know if you know this, but.
Yeah, you ever seen a face-off with the Outlaws?
Yeah, you ever seen a face-off?
That's me. That's me at the
X. That's me behind the guy that gets to do the face-off. I don't know if you know that, but I'm kind of a big deal.
Oh, my goodness.
I give him credit for playing that. I had an emergency. This is an emergency lane. She got in the way of my path, and I don't know if I mentioned this. I had an emergency.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Look, while we're here, one of my least favorite topics to talk about, but it deserves mention as we're barreling down the road to training camp just about a week away. Adam Gotsis. We still have not heard an update on Adam Gotsis. It's surpassed the 90-day window that we expected to hear something. This is not one of the, you know, no news is good news type of scenario, because we are going to hear something eventually. We thought we had heard it by now. We haven't. Troy, what's your take on it?
Well, these things, to put a deadline on it for me was never, I mean, they're going to investigate it thoroughly. I mean, those things in covering, and unfortunately too many criminal issues in covering sports over the last 25 years, in the case of the police, they have to be right. And they clearly believe they need a little more time to investigate. And that may exonerate him, or maybe because they're trying to get another witness to go, I mean, who knows? I mean, again, in this case, the Broncos have maintained that he can practice, he's part of the team, and they are as the NFL kind of has leaned in the last few years, seeing if there's resolution legally with the, you know, with the law. You can be suspended without being charged. Remember that.
Sure.
Like, it doesn't mean that he would escape suspension. He still might be suspended for this, but typically the league has tried to show more patience in recent years to let the law kind of act and then move in, rather than act quickly. And then if a guy's exonerated, then it puts him in this tricky spot of, you know, you should have let it play, you know, due process. But as of now, you know, and I've reported on this story as well. And Nikki Jabala from the Athletic has it's in a holding pattern. No new update. That's the update, is there's no new update. Doesn't mean there won't be one in the next week or two, but there's no new update. But remember this, fans, I caution you. You can be suspended without being charged. So you have to still guarantee it. And I know the league has looked into the matter, and I guarantee the league is waiting to see what happens with Cobb County. Are there going to be charges filed? Where is this going to go?
So if this continues, though, just to put a bow on this, and we don't hear anything, is Adam Gotsis in training camp day one?
Yes. Yes, because he wasn't. It would be the same scenario in which he was at minicamp. They're kind of proceeding to allow due process to play out. Now, sometimes, like Antonio Smith a couple years ago, they kind of pulled him out of things for a little bit. He had a weird charge going on, and eventually he was exonerated. But in the case of Gotsis, the way it was explained to me, he will practice, and they're just kind of monitoring the situation, if you will, and see where it goes. But as of now, no update.
All right. Cecil Lammy's Fantasy Draft Party. You're going to have a draft anyway, right? You and the boys? You might as well do it at Cecil Lammy's Draft Party. Sunday, August 27th, Doubletree DTC. Question and answer with Cecil from 1 to 3, and then he'll be on hand for your draft party from 3 to 7. Food and a draft board are included. It's just $15 per person. Register at 1043thefan.com. What a monster, pivotal 72-hour stretch for the Colorado Rockies that begins tonight. We'll take a dive into it when we come back. What a pivotal 72-hour stretch that begins for the Colorado Rockies. It is the pressure cooker is now officially on. The Rockies, who entered July 6 games behind the Diamondbacks, they are within now striking distance. Just about 2 games back. D-backs tonight, Chase Field in Arizona. Let's bring on Patrick Saunders, our Rocky insider from the Denver Post, presented by Rox Heating and Air. That's R-O-X, Heating and Air. Patrick, good to talk to you again. I'm looking at this series, not as a make or break for the season. I think that stretch will come in September. But you don't want to understate the importance in a head-to-head matchup against the Diamondbacks, who on the whole, outside of that last series heading into the break, have really owned the Colorado Rockies.
Well, no question about it. And I think as we were talking back then, before the Rockies had that series win back in Coors Field, I think the D-backs had won 9 straight games in Coors Field, which was a franchise record for the D-backs in an opposing stadium. So for the Rockies to win that series, they had the 19-2 game and then won a pitching duel. That was big for them, and that's all part of the run they've been on lately. And let's face it, if they had not gone on that run prior to the All-Star break, we might be sitting here this afternoon talking about whether the Rockies are going to start selling off some people. Now we're looking at the Rockies thinking, wow, they're in the thick of this NL West battle. And maybe if they can hang in there and the pitching continues, we might be in for a very, very interesting summer. But I think I'd rather take it the way it is now than opposed to the way it looked like it was going to be about a month ago.
Patrick, my friend, always good to have you on the program. How are you, man?
Good, thanks.
Well, I miss those days on the beat, waking up late on the West Coast time. Scottsdale, that was the NOS. It's Scottsdale, Pasadena, San Francisco. I mean, San Diego. Those are fun trips. Here, you just brought up an interesting point. Both Nolan Arenado spoke out saying he was frustrated with losing, and wanted to win. And Jeff Breidich basically challenged the players to kind of put their big boy pants on and get out of this slump. They did that. They've won 13 of 16. Is there a feeling as you're around the team every day, Patrick, that ownership, we did our part, go get us a reliever? Because we've seen Brad Hand come off the board now from the Padres, go to the Indians last night. You see, I think it was Jesse Chavez from the Rangers going to the Cubs. Do you think there's a feeling in that clubhouse, you're around it, that, hey, we got ourselves back in this, go get us a seventh inning arm?
No question there is, Troy, but you were around this organization for long enough to know that for whatever reason, outside of guys like Nolan Arenado, guys might say it off the record to you. On the record, they're not as vocal for whatever reason. It's just kind of the makeup of this clubhouse, but I can guarantee you there's enough guys on this team who feel exactly the way you just described it. In other words, listen, we're finally getting our act together. The offense has been good for probably they have that slump early in the year. The offense is coming on. The starting pitching is right now is in as good a place as almost it's ever been, really, if you look at it. And what is the one component that continually has disappointed and let the team down? And it's the bullpen. And I'm not talking about Wade Davis or Adam Ottavino. We're talking about Jake McGee and Brian Shaw and Chris Russon. We have some of the younger guys, Scott Olberg, et cetera, who are coming on and starting to do a better job. But it's clear that despite all the money the Rockies spent in the offseason, $106 million, the bullpen has been the weak link. And I know there's a feeling within this team that, man, if we lose out our chance to win this division, then I can tell you, Troy, the team thinks the NL West is there for the taking.
As they should.
And of course, that was before the Manny Machado deal. But still, there is a feeling, hey, if we can get our act together in the bullpen, we can win this division. That's the feeling. And so I think you're right. I haven't talked specifically to the guys about, listen, you've done your part now. Is it time for management and ownership to do their part and bring another piece before the trade deadline? I can guarantee you that feeling is within that club.
Well, and I've said this before about the Rockies. And again, they put a nice team together here. And they need, for me, to gain footing is to go back-to-back playoffs. They've never done it. And hope is not a strategy. I've said that about the Rockies. And if you think it's Olberg in the seventh, I like Scott Olberg. I do. But he doesn't have the track record to say, oh, yeah, he can lock down the seventh. Russon, Shaw, McGee, they just haven't had it this year. And maybe one of them will figure it out. But I love to spend other people's money. You got to get a seventh inning guy. But go to the rotation now, Patrick. Where does it stand? We got Marquez tonight. Freeland, is Gray now back in the rotation? Where do we stand with Bettis? Can you kind of reset the rotation for this series specifically? What does it look like for the Rockies?
Well, right as of now is Marcus tonight, and then Freeland on Saturday. Probably Gray on Sunday, although that's to be decided. Buddy Black will probably let us know here in a couple hours. It'll be Gray on Saturday. And then at some point, Sensatella is going to be in this mix. And who am I missing?
So Anderson and Bettis. Where does Bettis?
Oh,
is Bettis going out on
right
rehab?
Now, he is. This weekend, actually.
Okay.
Because finally that blister problem is starting to heal up. And I think Sensatella's actually was less of a problem than Chad's was. So you'll see Sensatella. My guess is you're probably going to see Gray on Sundays. So as it stands now, we have Freeland, Marcus, Gray, Anderson, and Sensatella.
And Marcus has got the game tonight, right? Marcus goes
correct
against Ray tonight. Okay.
Correct.
Patrick Saunders, our Rockies insider from the Denver Post, presented by Rox Heating and Air. That's ROX Heating and Air. Last one quickly, Patrick, on the way out the door. I almost feel like, you know, I don't want to say this to jinx them, but I almost feel like the break couldn't have come at a worse time for the Rockies, as they were just scorching. And Trevor Story in particular, and I need to say this out loud because it's really incredible. Trevor Story is hitting a major league high, 378 since June 8th. 378, no one in the majors has done it better. Is there any concern on your behalf, Patrick, that the break for Story or the Rockies in general could halt some of that momentum that they had going?
Not really. I think, you know, Nolan Arenado even said that a little bit. I think that's a little bit of a cliche, because any time through the course, and Troy knows this, any time through the course of a long baseball season, you get a few days off to heal up all those minor bumps and bruises. I think it's very welcome. Maybe Trevor Story, as hot as he was, didn't want to take a break, but I think the rest of the guys were very ready for this. And let's face it, when you're on that hot a streak, it's only going to continue for so long. You know, I think they'd won, 10 of 12, 13 of 16, whatever it was. I don't think that's a big problem. If they win tonight, the momentum's right back in their corner. So that, to me, is not that big a deal. And I think if their starting rotation continues to pitch as it has been, that's what springs the momentum. That's the birthplace of momentum for this team. I think that the team's in a good place. But getting back to what Troy said earlier, I agree with him 100%. They need a bridge to Ottavino and to Wade Davis. Specifically, they need a left-handed bridge. But if they can't find it, you know, who knows? And Brian Shaw told me, he said, listen, I still have faith in myself. Maybe I'm going to be the guy who's almost like getting a trade for the second and a half of the season. That's how he's thinking. But until he does it, it's put up or shut up time for Brian Shaw right now.
Yeah, you said it. Patrick Saunders, Rockies insider from the Denver Post, presented by Rox Heating and Air. That's ROX Heating and Air. Patrick, have fun out there. We'll be watching it closely, and we'll talk again soon.
Okay, guys. Have a great day. Thank you.
All right. And he mentioned the Rockies pitching is where the momentum starts. How about this, Troy? The Rockies have a 2.76 ERA in their last 16 games. No surprise, they've won 13 of those 16 games. Troy, NFL.com ranked the NFL's thinnest position groups. There's a name on there that should have Case Keenum licking his chops. We'll get to it next. So I was perusing NFL.com yesterday, and they did a cool thing. They did, you know, the thinnest. They gave you seven of the thinnest position groups in the NFL, and they gave you seven of the deepest position groups in the NFL. It was an interesting piece, but there was one segment of the seven thinnest position groups in the NFL that should have Case Keenum eyes lighting up like a Christmas tree. And that's because NFL.com listed the Seattle Seahawks secondary as one of the seventh thinnest positional groups in the National Football League. Here's their explanation, Troy. And once again, Troy Rank filling in for Brandon Stokely today. Quote, at its peak, the famed Legion of Boom secondary resembled a superhero cast. Richard Sherman was the dominant playmaking cornerback of the past half decade. Cam Chancellor was the bone-jarring alpha dog, daring receivers to cross the middle of the field. Earl Thomas was the heady center fielder with rare closing speed, tying the defense together. That same cast of characters that once boasted the greatest pass defense of the 21st century was decidedly average in 2017. Now Sherman is in San Francisco, and Chancellor believes he's played his last NFL game. If Thomas's recent trade wish is granted, the transition from Legion of Boom to Legion of Whom will be complete. Pete Carroll can cobble together a competitive pass defense if Thomas stays to patrol the back end. If Thomas leaves, however, Carroll may be in over his head with a collection of unproven draft picks and past prime journeymen. What do you make of that, Troy? Week 1, September 9th, Case Keenum and the Denver Broncos going up against what looks to be one of the thinnest position groups in the NFL.
Well, they're not the same without Richard Sherman. You can say whatever you want, and he was hurt last year, but he brought an edge, and he brought a playmaking ability that was just spectacular. We were talking about cornerbacks yesterday and how Revis could be a first-ballot Hall of Famer. He would have the fewest interceptions by a corner to go into the Hall of Fame.
Revis would.
That was my point. Like, I don't remember him as a playmaker. I remember him as a shutdown guy.
You're talking about Revis.
Revis.
Yes.
And Sherman.
But we talked about that, though. There's a reason. He's got 29 interceptions, but it was like a four-year stretch where no one would throw to him. I think that's part of it, though, right?
That's part of it. Richard Sherman is a playmaker on the ball. Like, he makes plays. And he brought an attitude and edge. Love him or hate him. I mean, again, I covered the Seahawks for about 17 days when leading up to the Super Bowl, when the Broncos played them in Super Bowl, was that 48?
Mm-hmm.
Never been around a team more confident. It was like they had the Cliff Notes to the test. Peyton Manning had the greatest year in the NFL, and they're just like, he's never seen us. And I'm talking about every guy on that defense had confidence and swag that was so palpable. I'm like, did they get the answers? Like, what? I mean, and that's why I walked away saying, man, Denver could be a gnarly game. But here's the other part, why I agree they're thin. Not only do you lose Sherman, you lose Earl Thomas kind of mentally now. And Cam Chancellor's retired.
Yeah.
And Chancellor, you talk, who brought the boom? It was Chancellor.
He was that dude.
Oh, my. I mean, he just made it hurt watching him from the press box when he'd light guys up. I mean, he'd light guys up like the Vegas Strip on a weekly basis. And Earl Thomas is as good a safety as I've seen on that side. He is, for me, the modern-day Steve Atwater. Why I've told Steve, you should be in the Hall of Fame. And if people analyze the metrics the way they do now, Steve Atwater would be in the Hall of Fame. Back when he played, they threw 20 times a game. Atwater was a bigger version of Earl Thomas. Earl Thomas is a playmaker. He's roves. He hits. And now he's unhappy. He's basically wants to be a Cowboy.
Yeah.
He's basically said, either give me some substantial raise, which they're not going to do, or trade me to Dallas. So I agree with you. And we get back to must-win games. You can't say must-win first game of the season.
It sounds ridiculous, but
you look at their schedule and the position that their coach shows up to training camp with oven mitts on because he's on the Bunsen burner. You can't see Seattle and go, oh, yeah, we're good. We can lose that and win here. No, that's a winnable game. And I love Russell Wilson. They don't run the ball. And Broncos match up against Seattle well because Seattle doesn't run the ball effectively. Teams that don't run on the Broncos, typically that's the games I feel like they can win because they get a big play from their defense because they're in your face. They're pressuring. Vaughn's living in the backfield. He's turned the backfield into his own B&B. And you got him getting a tip or a rush pass, and all of a sudden you look up, pick six. But I agree. Seattle secondary is vulnerable. Vulnerable.
And you look at, you mentioned their running game in passing there. Who runs the football for the Seattle Seahawks?
Well, they've had guys that start for like 2 weeks and disappear. They go through running backs like Spinal Tap goes through drummers.
It is so strange, and I'm looking at their numbers right now. You know who led them in rushing last year?
Russell Wilson. I was going to say, because he was the one guy on the field.
So here's the kicker, though. Here's the kicker. Russell Wilson led the Seahawks in rushing by more than double the next outputter. And Russell Wilson didn't run for 1,000 yards. He ran for 586 yards, which is insane for a quarterback. I know that. But that was more than twice as much as Mike Davis, their next leading rushing back, who on the season, Troy Rank, on the season, ran for 240 yards. That's insane.
That's a trivia question. Who was the Seahawks' leading running back on the ground? I wouldn't have guessed that because they had. What was the guy that keeps getting hurt that they like? Not Michelle. They cut him now. Who's the next guy on the list? Who's the next couple guys?
Thomas Rawls, Eddie Lacy.
Rawls. I mean, Lacy, God bless him. I mean, he's eaten himself out of the league a couple of different times.
Yeah.
I don't even know if he's in the league now.
I think he's a free agent still.
Rawls is the guy they've always liked, and he just, you know, has a great game, and then he, like, breaks his fibula. He's had, like, just devastating injuries. So I think he's coming back. I hope he's healthy. Hate to see guys hurt in any sport, but
he's never played 16. He's going to his fourth year. He's played 13, 9, and 12.
And Russell Wilson, him rushing for 500-plus yards, not a great strategy if you're the Seahawks, because he is now clearly the face of the franchise. Nowhere else, you know, no Cam Chancellor, no Richard Sherman, no Marshawn Lynch. They put it all in, all their chips to the table, and it reminds me what happened with Baltimore when they played Flacco, although I think Russell Wilson's better than Flacco.
Sure.
But you pay your window to win is when your quarterback's not making money. It's why the Colts screwed it up so badly. The window to win with Andrew Luck was when he was on his first contract. Now you have to pay him a gazillion dollars. Now you better be right on every other decision. You look at teams that win, it's like one of their main positions, they're not paying anything. And Russell Wilson was perfect because he was making third-round money for, what, 3 years?
Yeah, it's making like $400,000.
Yeah, and that's huge when you're like, okay, give what's their linebacker's name? Bobby
Wagner.
Give him an extension. Give Chancellor extension. You can do all that when your quarterback's making $400,000.
Right.
But once he starts making $17 million, you got to start making tough choices. And they made a huge one with Lynch, and they haven't even come close to replacing him since he left.
No, they haven't. They haven't. And you know what? I want to talk a little bit more about that Week 1 matchup. We will do so in just a couple minutes. But I got to let you guys know, it's that time again. We have a free limited edition Training Camp 2018 t-shirts. We had so much fun. Man, I was waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning, like getting out to Longmont and Fort Collins and down on Colfax. I was all over giving away these t-shirts at 7 in the morning, and we would get people wrapped around a gas station. It was so cool. I had so much amazing interaction with our listeners last summer this time. We're doing it again. We're handing them out next week, presented by Breaks Plus, and we'll be all over Denver, believe you me. Wherever you live, you got a shot to snag one. There's only a limited amount available, again, so you got to listen for details Monday morning, 7:45, with Schlereth and Evans. These are high-quality shirts. Steven's wearing his shirt today. It's comfortable, right? High-level cotton. The thread count is terrific, trust me. all right, Troy Rank, you put out a piece for Channel 7. And you said you had 7 things to ponder heading into training camp. We'll comb through those 7 next. Hanging out with Troy Rank, who's filling in for Brandon Stokely today. Troy, who just told me at one point in his life was drinking 8 to 9 Red Bulls a day.
I was writing a book at midnight to 6 a.m. 7, 8 years ago. It was the only way I could stay up. I've never had a cup of coffee in my life. It's a weird diversion. I grew up with a family. We drank hot tea. I don't know why. I couldn't explain to you. Never had coffee. So in these jobs, you work weird hours.
Yeah, sure.
Like in baseball especially, you work night, day game. You know, spring training's all day games. You get to the season, it's night games. And as you get older, you need a bump. And caffeine has been a friend of mine for a long time. And at a point when I was writing that book, like I was drinking it like a rock star, like, and I loved it. You know, and I wasn't even experiencing the long downs. It was just giving me a stomach ache. And I was talking to a person who works for a soft drink company, and he was saying like some of those energy drinks, if like they spill and they leak on pallets, it eats through the wood. And I'm like, that sounds about right.
That's what my
stomach feels like at times.
They use Coca-Cola to clean a car battery.
Exactly. So last October, I stopped all energy drinks. I still drink way more than I should have Diet Mountain Dew.
I was going to say, you and I did the morning show this past week, and it was 6:01 a.m., and you're slurping down a Mountain Dew.
Because I don't drink coffee.
Why don't you just try it?
I don't know. I should, I guess. I don't know. I'm weird like that.
I feel like I'm like hanging outside the school ground going, try this, Troy.
You should try this.
Try this.
Look at this, Colombian coffee. You should try this. Got it, Medellin. It's like our version of Narcos.
Yeah. You put out a piece in the not-so-distant past here for ABC7, 7 things to ponder heading into training camp. Let's count these down. You down?
Sounds good, man.
All right. Number 7, let's be real about the line in the sand. What did you mean by that?
Well, the offensive line's a question until it's not. I want to be optimistic, but I've been burned in the past. You know, like, oh, they're going to be better this year. You know, they've had the whole MacGyver chicken wire duct tape lines, and their best line was the year they won the Super Bowl, because they all kind of coalesced at the very end. You know, Ryan Harris, good friend, loved the guy. He played well. Michael Schofield, for all the criticism in the playoffs, was serviceable. They've had issue with right tackle. So the line in the sand is, I want to say they're better. If Jared Valdir is steady at right tackle, I like it, because I think Ron Leary's his knee willing. He'll be fine at left guard with Bowles improving at left tackle. And Valdir, again, you can file away Pro Football Focus any way you want, but what was it, 20 pressures his first three starts at right tackle for Arizona last year, and then basically 19 over the final like 10 games.
Correct.
So improvement. If he's that player, that's when you say the line in the sand is. I'm kind of drawing a line in the sand. Like, a lot of things could go right, but if that line's not right, it's going to go wrong. And I think they're going to be better if Valdir is the guy who that finished last season with the Cardinals.
Reason number six, or thing number six, I should say, to ponder heading into training camp, the kids are all right. What did you mean by that?
Well, this rookie class, I mean, I write here on the DenverChannel.com, you can find the article. The juxtaposition from this year's rookie class and a year ago is just alarming. I mean, these are high football IQ guys. Every guy was a captain at some point in his career, either in high school or college. There's a maturity that belies their age. And I mean, when you talk to Courtland Sutton and you talk to a Deshaun Hamilton, they get it. Like, I'm not saying it's going to ensure success, but I like their chances of success, because they're like talking about getting the playbook, first guy in. Yep. I'm going to learn from this guy. Like, it's not just saying the right things. I've seen him do the right things, Zach. So, Courtland Sutton, we talked about his athleticism. You will see at camp is amazing. Deshaun Hamilton, for a young guy, is a premier route runner. I'm intrigued by him. And I like the idea, again, of Royce Freeman. But the young guys, I like the kids. Courtland Sutton, Deshaun Hamilton, for an offense we talk about, needs to be caffeinated. Maybe they're a little boost. Maybe they're the 5 energy shot.
Maybe they're the Red Bull.
Or the 5 energy shot. I don't know. I don't want to give them Red Bull yet. That stays in its own little category.
Okay. Thing number five to ponder heading into training camp, bark at the moon. What do you mean by that?
Your guy here at the Fan, Derek Wolf, when he fills in, it's must listen.
He's the man.
He's great at it. He's opinionated. Just a very fascinating guy to interview. And when he's on these airwaves on the Fan, he's amazing. Derek Wolf has teeth. How do I know that? He's smiling again. The last couple of years, I didn't see him smile much. You know, I'm always trying to make an attempt if he's at his locker to talk to him, because he's always said something insightful to tell me about, hey, I ask, why do you do this? Why does another team? Great football IQ, but he was in pain. Last year, he essentially played a couple games. I couldn't feel his arm.
Yeah.
Because of the neck injury.
That's scary, yeah.
And I'm like, dude, I mean, I'm just sitting there listening to this as a reporter. You got to start taking, you're talking about your neck and your future. You got a new child, you know, a stepdaughter. I mean, you got to be careful here. This sounds like some not tough guy stuff, scary stuff. The Derek Wolf I've seen since the neck surgery, he looks rejuvenated. You know, again, looks, he's healthy, strong.
You've seen him do it. You've seen him turn his head. Like, he couldn't do that. Actually, you and I were, when we were crossing ships in the night when Derek and I were done, you were asking him right over there. You're saying, how about the neck? And he was just like, he can turn it like an owl now.
Yeah, and he couldn't do that before. So bark at the moon is Derek Wolf is a unique player, a guy who can stop the run and also provide an inside pass rush. So a healthy Derek Wolf with a better DeMarcus Walker, Domantas Petco, Shelby Harris, I think their defensive line is going to be a strength. And even if there's some regression to the mean with Shelby Harris or Domantas Petco for age, I think Derek Wolf can pick that up, and DeMarcus Walker in year two will be a contributing, he'll contribute as a rotational player now that they've smartly focused him on DN, get him away from outside linebacker.
Troy ranks 7 things to ponder heading into training camp. Thing number 4, Harris leads the way.
Again, Makib Talib's gone. I've said it. He was the soundtrack of the defense. Terrific player. For me, should be a Ring of Fame candidate. Might not. I don't care. All I know is the dude could just make plays. And we talk about cornerbacks who, when they get their ball in the hand, they're trying to get to the house. That was Talib. But they've moved on. They believe in Bradley Roby. But for this defense to get where it wants to be, and for the no-fly zone, which still exists, by the way.
It does still exist?
Yes, because the creator is Chris Harris. And you have he, Roby, and Darian Stewart. Those three guys were a big part of it. You know, it's not Legion of Whom, as it is in Seattle. There's enough thread left there to say it still exists. Now, this is a crossroads year for it, because if Roby doesn't step up, the no-fly zone, it really won't exist. You have to have two corners to have the no-fly zone. Case closed. Chris Harris should be a captain. He should have been a team captain last year. He should be a team captain. And with Tlaib gone, and they got along. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying with Tlaib gone, there's more space in the room for Harris. He needs to fill it. He needs to be a guy that's a rudder in that locker room. He's got as much on his resume as anybody on that defense outside of Von Miller. Be a leader. He's capable of it. He is the smartest defensive player, along with T.J. Ward. But Chris Harris, for me, was like a Peyton Manning on defense. Lean on Chris Harris. Let him lead the way.
Do you think they'll, and this is a side question from your seven things to ponder heading into camp, how do they handle the captains this year? How do they handle the captains? I mean, do you go back to the same well?
Well, it's voted on by players, theoretically. Here's the deal. Chris Harris needs to be a captain.
Period, right?
Period.
Like, to me, that's a no-brainer.
Tlaib, the guys love Tlaib, so I have no doubt he got elected by the players. That's why it told me it was a player's vote, because the coaches wouldn't have elected Tlaib. Players love Aqib Tlaib because he has their back. But in a losing situation, he wasn't the ideal captain.
Yeah, that's clear.
That's not his role. In a winning situation, he makes a good team great. In a team that's bad, can kind of sometimes make it worse because he gets so frustrated. He's so competitive, hates it. He's not a guy that's going to put his arm around someone and smooth the waters. That's not Tlaib. Chris Harris should be a captain. Case Keenum, he might as well announce it first day. He's clearly a captain. Von Miller's going to be a captain for me. Needs to be a captain. I think he does.
To me, Von Miller, and this is, again, just my humble opinion, I don't think Von needs to be a captain. I think a guy like Derek Wolfe should be the captain. I don't subscribe to, you know, your best players don't always equal your best leaders. I think your best leaders should be put in that captain position. But it's hard once you go down the road and name Von a captain in the previous year to, you know, sort of indirectly take that label away from him. I don't know if you can do that now that you've done it.
But you won't want to because he acts like a captain. He does as much with players as anybody. He is a captain for me. I observe how much he does with players.
So Von's a natural leader?
No, he just unifies a locker room. He pushes guys. He's become a workout animal. He's the guy saying, you got to get in the weight room. He's the guy saying, we got to go watch them. He learned and gleaned as much from DeMarcus Ware as you could ever imagine. He's earned the right. I'm not saying make him captain because he's your best player. I'm saying make him a captain because I observe how he interacts with his teammates. He is captain for me. He is. And Wolf, this is why Wolf being healthy can make a difference. Derek isn't a guy, if he's not playing, and he's playing four snaps a game, he's hurt, he doesn't want to be banging on the tables, do this, do that. If he's healthy and playing like he's capable of, then his leadership comes out because he's such an edge. He brings such, and they, you know, that's like, we talk about with Tlaib and Ward, they missed that with Malik Jackson. And that could have been Wolf. He just hasn't been healthy.
Yeah.
Wolf healthy can bring some of that nastiness that Malik Jackson brought. But you can't bring it if you're not on the field. So that's why I'm curious with Wolf. And he leads in a way that's like, you know, grab you by the nape of the neck. He's more vocal. He's got an edge to him that I like.
And I think that edge may actually bode in exact alignment with what the Broncos are trying to do with this sort of reset. You know, we've heard John in his conversation with Paul Klee, the Gazette, you know, when they're out golfing, talking about the resetting the culture. I'm not so sure, and it's a tricky situation because you've named Von a captain before, and even if you want to do that again, okay, you've named Demaryius before. I'm not so sure that you don't need to hit the reset button in this category too. You know what I mean?
Well, it's organic. Let the players vote. And that's why I think last year for sure players were involved because Tlaib got elected. Coaches wouldn't have put Tlaib as a captain. So somewhere there's true voting in there because Tlaib got elected.
Sure.
Because that was a direct reflection of how his teammates felt about him. Chris Harris, for me, now should be a captain. And even the C, whatever, that's a symbol for me. It's just captain and how they lead the room. I don't really care, technically, if they have the C on their chest.
That's beside the point.
You need rudders in there. And frankly, defensively, they'll figure it out. Offensively, they've had the personality of khaki Dockers. And now with Case Keenum, when we walk into the room, there will be no who's the leader of this offense.
Yeah, yep.
Who was the leader of the offense last 2 years? I would say 2 years ago, Emmanuel Sanders was the best offensive player. but he wasn't viewed as a leader.
Yeah.
And last year, their best offensive player was C.J. Anderson. He wasn't viewed as a leader necessarily, and not knowing the quarterback was just undermining them on a weekly basis.
Who was the leader last year offensively?
I mean, again, I'd say C.J. Anderson.
Probably C.J., right?
C.J., but it's a running back? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it's just a weird fit. I mean, even though Demaryius is a captain, and that always comes from how he practices and his toughness. Every time I ask players, because we're like, I don't see him being vocal, they're like, no, you don't see the stuff behind the scenes. Demaryius is good with the guys, and he's tough, and he practices hard. He does a lot of things guys respect. But when we walk in there on a media day, on a Wednesday, Zach, there'll be no question. Who's the leader of the offense?
Case Keenum.
Case Keenum. That's part of the reason I think they're going to be better.
Your final three things to ponder heading into training camp. We will get to those. But first, Stephen Priest, what's up at the Denver Snapshot?